Time to go.
This is Buccaneers Total Access, Total Access with head coach Dirk Cotter.
Fire the cannons!
Brought to you by Frontier Communications. Fios keeps you in the game. Visit FrontierFlorida.com to join the team.
Winston looking left, goes a deep route toward Mike Evans. He hangs on! Touchdown, Tampa Bay! Mike Evans goes up and takes it away from two defenders. What a great throw by Winston!
Now your host, Bucs insider Casey Phillips and head coach Dirk Cotter.
Hey there, Tampa Bay. Happy Friday afternoon to all of you. Hope you are excited about a great weekend coming up and a great game against the Bills. We are so excited to have head coach Dirk Cotter here with us, and we want you to get a chance to ask all of your questions. You can do that on Twitter. Use that hashtag Bucs Radio. You can also do it on the Bucs app under the feature section, and you can also call in Hillsboro, 813-990-4620, Pinellas, 727-461-4620, and toll-free 888-546-4620. Coach, how are you doing today?
Hey, Casey, how are you?
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us. We want to go ahead and just jump right in with the good news of today. We had a question from John, and he said, so, Coach, how big of a relief was it to know that Jameis was available for you today, but also how prepared had you felt with Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Yeah, both of those. I mean, of course, we want Jameis out there. He's our starter. He's the face of our franchise. And, you know, to be honest, there really wasn't a whole lot of doubt. I mean, how could we doubt Jameis? I mean, he's such a tough guy, and he's such a great competitor. At the same time, he did need to get a couple days without throwing to rest that shoulder. And Ryan Fitzpatrick did a nice job of filling in. Also, it gave Ryan Griffin a chance to get some reps with the scout team. Now, Ryan Griffin is not eligible to play yet for another couple weeks. Up until the New Orleans game would be the first time he would be eligible to be brought back off of injury reserve designated for return. We wouldn't be able to bring him back to the New Orleans game. But yeah, we're very excited that Jameis is good, and as well as some other players. Quan Alexander is going to be returning to the lineup this week. Keith Tandy looks like he's going to be back healthy this week. So, you know, of course, you want to be as healthy as you can each and every week.
Yeah, and Phil had asked about that linebacker situation. He said, now that all your linebackers are healthy, do you see you guys changing anything about how you want to use all of them now that you've seen how good Beckwith has been early on?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, when we started the season, of course, we knew about Levante. We knew about Quan. And at that point, you know, in training camp, Kendall hadn't done anything in OTAs coming off a knee injury. So, you know, we were kind of having him in a competition with Devontae Bond for the Sam linebacker position. But Kendall has filled in and played, has done a really nice job. So, one of the things we're definitely looking at moving forward is, you know, how do we get those guys all on the field at the same time?
Yeah, and then Daniel also had brought up when you said Ryan Griffin, he'd said, does this make it even more urgent to have him on the 53-man roster when you saw how close it was to needing him to play?
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, that's a very debatable question throughout the league. You know, there's teams that have three quarterbacks. There's teams that have two quarterbacks. And definitely when Jameis couldn't go back in the game last week and you're sitting there with one quarterback, you know, you are a little bit nervous. But at the same time, if you do keep the third quarterback, you know, you have to keep another guy down. You have to keep another guy inactive. And that's, you know, depending on who that guy is and the positions. And I think that's just one thing that people don't have a full understanding of the scope of it. Of, you know, you have 53 guys, only 46 of them can be up. You've always got a couple of guys that are banged up and can't go. So it's a challenge for Jason and myself every week. But the three quarterback, two quarterback thing is something that's goes on throughout the league. There's a lot of debate.
Jamie wanted to know, obviously, whenever a game starts the way that it did this one, it kind of throws out the game plan you've been working on all week. So what does that do for you during the game, and how do you try to work a new game plan in the middle of the game itself?
Yeah, well, you know, as far as the Arizona game goes, you know, we were trying to stay in our game plan early in the game. At the point there in the second quarter when Jameis had to leave the game, and you know, they scored to make it 24-0, and then we got the ball back with a few minutes remaining in the half. At that point, you're just trying to get some points on the board because we were going to get the ball first to start the second half. So, you know, we thought if we could go down, score, go for two, and make it 24-8, that would be a really nice boost going into halftime and come out and get the ball in the second half. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. And, you know, we came out, had a turnover. They went and scored again. And so now, you know, one series into the second half, it's 31-0. At that point, you're basically in a variation of two-minute offense for the rest of the game.
And Jamie, in a related note, wanted to know about the game planning with the two-point conversions. He said, I know that was mainly because of being down by so much, but what are your thoughts on using them in a normal game situation?
Yeah, I think I'm more traditional or old school, whatever you want to call it. But, I mean, you know, you saw what happened last week. I think we went for it four times, something like that, and we made one. You know, the league average is a little bit under 50%. It's usually somewhere on most seasons, it's around 43%. Doesn't seem like that much, only 2 yards, but when the defense only has to defend 12 yards, they get everybody up there close. Now, once you're down 24 points, like we were, we are going to be in a go for two mode, but for the most part, we believe in going for one and not getting onto the two-point chart and following what the chart says until fourth quarter.
We're talking to head coach Dirk Koetter here, and Doug had a question saying, I know there are no moral victories, but how impressed were you with your team's ability to come back?
Yeah, I appreciate that question, Doug, and I've been asked that a lot this week. And, you know, depending on what line of work you're in, but if you compete for a living, you know, the losses all hurt the same, whether it's by one or by 41, they all hurt the same. Now, luckily, I've said that before, but luckily they only count as one, you know, so you can't let one loss beat you 2 weeks in a row. But I'm not a believer in moral victories. Some individual players, you know, it was nice that some individual players did some things there in the second half. Brent Grimes made a couple of really nice plays on the defensive side of the ball. You know, Mike Evans and Ryan Fitzpatrick hooked up, of course, on a long touchdown. Ryan hooked up with Cam on a touchdown. But still, the sting of the loss is what hurts the most.
All right, we've got our first phone caller of the evening we're bringing in. This is John from Sefner, and he has a question about fresh legs late in a game. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Coach, how you doing? Yeah, my question is, now that you've got to look at some of these next man up guys and they've got some game experience under their belt, is it more advantageous to kind of rotate guys in and out in the fourth quarter to keep everyone fresh, or do you still kind of tend to want to keep the experienced guys out there as much as possible?
Yeah, well, the thing is, with 46 guys, there's not a whole lot of rotating to be going on. I mean, you only have 7 offensive linemen. We do rotate the defensive line, and we did rotate at safety. We rotate a little bit at wide receiver with Adam Humphries and Chris Godwin getting in there. But, you know, there's just some positions, O-line, quarterback being two, corner is another, where, you know, you're just not going to rotate too much. I mean, linebacker is another one. I mean, when you have established players in this league, for the most part, they don't want to rotate. You know, they want to go out there and play the game. That's what they get paid to do. You know, they train to basically play 64 plays on offense, 64 plays on defense. and there's about 27 or 28 plays on special teams. So keeping the D-line fresh, main one, and a little bit the wide receivers. But, you know, for the most part, these guys want to play, and we believe in letting them play.
Aaron, we had a question on Twitter. They were saying, hey, I'm a big Hargraves fan, but obviously he's been struggling recently. What do you think he needs to do to be more successful?
Yeah, I think he just needs to play more aggressive and trust his ability. Vernon's a very talented guy, and I've seen him do it. And I know Vernon has really worked hard this week in practice. I think he's just playing a little bit too cautious, and I think he just has to get up there and challenge the receivers a little bit more and be more aggressive.
And Drew has a question saying, with a little bit of difficulty hitting D-Jax deep, how are you trying to find ways to utilize his speed, like when Winston hit him on a short crossing route?
Yeah. Well, what happens is, you know, people think you can just do that every time. You know, when Jameis hit Deshaun on that short crossing route, I'm assuming he's referring to the one in the New England game that turned into a 40-yard gain. I mean, we have other plays that are very similar to that that get called at other points in the game. They just happen to be in the right defense at the right time, and Jameis hit him perfectly in stride, and they were pressuring us at the time, so they had a couple extra defenders rushing the quarterback. You know, we've got a lot of guys that are good with the ball in their hand. We're trying to get them the ball in the hand, but you know, you just there's a defense out there too, and they get paid. You have to have the right thing on at the right time. So yeah, we'd love to get Deshaun involved. Well, we have other guys that we'd like to get them touches too.
We've got our next caller lined up. This is Ward from Brandon, who has a question about the 2-minute offense. Go ahead, Ward.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call, Coach. My question is about the 2-minute offense. It seems like we run it really well, especially at the end of the game or halftime. Is that just because defenses are kind of playing prevent and playing deep, or is it just something that we're good at in spreading guys out, and do you think that might help to start a game that way?
Yeah, that's a good point, Ward, and I think it's a combination of both. I mean, I think kind of the norm in the NFL is if you're behind by two scores, most defenses – play pretty vanilla, and they'll let you move the ball, figuring that at some point you'll either screw it up or you'll get a penalty or they'll sack your quarterback. When it's a one-score game in 2-minute offense, most teams play a lot tighter, bring a lot more pressure. We do seem to do a pretty good job in it. We've had success moving the ball in the 2-minute, and you know, we've been a pretty good no-huddle team in the past. It's a little bit harder on the road due to crowd noise, but that is definitely something that we're looking at.
All right, let me remind everybody all the ways you can submit those questions here for Coach on Twitter. It's the hashtag BucksRadio, the Bucks app under the feature section, and here are your phone numbers. Hillsborough County, 813-990-4620. Pinellas, 727-461-4620, and toll-free, 888-546-4620. We're going to take a quick break here. Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Cutter, brought to you by Frontier Communications. This is Buccaneers Radio.
Buccaneers Total Access, brought to you by Frontier Communications, now continues with head coach Dirk Cutter and Bucs insider Casey Phillips on Tampa Bay Sports Radio, 620 WDAE and 95.3 FM, home of the best Bucs coverage.
Welcome back in. We are here with Dirk Cutter, and of course, we love getting to your questions. You know the phone numbers. Use that hashtag BucksRadio on Twitter. You can also do the Bucks app under the feature section to get all of those questions in for him. All right, Coach, our next one is from Major, and he says, do you or have you considered scripting the first set of plays in a game to help jumpstart the offense?
Yeah, we do. We do script the first plays. We usually script about 12 plays to start every game.
All right, and then Bobby wants to know, I watched your press conference. You said you're not the DJ in the locker room, but if you were, what songs would you play?
I'd probably be going with some James Taylor, which probably wouldn't go over too well.
Now we know why you're not the DJ in the locker room.
Yeah, that's exactly why I'm not the DJ.
I love it. All right. Jessica wanted to know, how do you rate Ali Marpet so far as a center now that we're more than a fourth of the way through the season?
I think Ali's doing a nice job, and his physical style of play and the firmness he brings to the center of our protection has made a difference. I mean, I think that shows up statistically as well as on tape. I think Ali still is has some things to learn about making split second adjustments. That's an experience thing, and we've had a couple of snap issues in the shotgun. Again, that's him, you know, being a little bit too anxious to go get his guy blocked and just realizing he's got to make a perfect snap to Jameis first. But overall, very pleased, and think the future in the center of the Bucs line is extremely bright.
Rick wanted to know, he said, the Bills defense is very good in the red zone. Why has Cam Brate been so good in that area, and how do you get others to that same level?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The Bills defense statistically is doing well in a lot of categories. Red zone defense is one of them. And, you know, Cam puts a lot of work in with the quarterbacks on his red zone package, the routes that he's going to run each week. You know, teams, a tight end in the end zone, a big body tight end, as I mentioned on one of the earlier calls, when the field shrinks down in the red zone, you know, bigger guys typically have more success than smaller guys, just because everything kind of turns into some body up, jump ball, you know, back shoulder. There's always guys hanging on you. Cam is really good at those kind of catches. He has a unique ability to when balls are thrown. A great example is that one that Ryan Fitzpatrick threw him last week. I mean, that was a back shoulder throw. The linebacker was all over him. The safety was behind him. And that back shoulder ball is very difficult to defend. You know, when we had Tony Gonzalez in Atlanta, you know, I got to witness firsthand one of the best ever to do that. And, you know, Cam, that's just one of his strongest traits. And he and Jameis have really connected on that, and last week it carried over to Ryan. It's hard, you know, this question, why don't other people? Mike Evans has that trait as well. Unfortunately, Mike Evans gets double covered. Almost every team we play will put the corner on Mike's outside shoulder, and the corner's forcing him to the safety. I mean, they won't. You've seen what happens. Everybody's seen what happens. When the corner lets Mike outside on a fade route, we hit it. But what happens a lot is, you know, Mike gets squeezed between the corner and the safety on a double team. But, you know, there's other guys that we're working on it. Hopefully we get OJ to be as good as Cam in the red zone. That's easier said than done.
And Rob wants to know, why have the Bills receivers been struggling so much? And will the addition of Deontay Thompson fix a lot of that, and also potentially having Matthews back?
Yeah, I would say that the guy they're waiting to get back is Matthews. I mean, he's the guy they're counting on to be their number one receiver. Now, it sounded to me on the injury reports this week that Matthews is coming off thumb surgery, which you can imagine would be difficult for a wide receiver, and that he's been practicing but maybe hasn't been fully cleared in the team setting. You know, every team's different. Every team's different. So, you know, why? I think their receivers, their outside receivers, are accounting for like 26 or 28% of their catches. Their leading receivers, LeSean McCoy, and, you know, that's easy to see why they would want to get the ball to him. And then Charles Clay, their tight end, he's been having a really nice year. He unfortunately suffered an injury last week and is not going to be playing this week, but you know, they've just been going more to the backs and tight ends so far.
Kyle said, I saw the video of Jameis's throw to the media. It was really funny. Was that his first read?
I think that one got away from him a little bit.
I enjoyed that, the first read question. All right, and then John says, We are last in sacks, which I know is a concern with division games coming up against elite quarterbacks. What are you and Coach Smith doing to address the lack of pressure by our defense?
Well, there's only so much you can do. I mean, we can send more rushers, that's for sure. We can send more rushers. You know, if you send more rushers, you know, there could be consequences on the coverage end of it. And, you know, we work real hard on our Coach Hayes with the D-line works real hard with their pass rush moves, their individual moves, and their two- and three-man games, their combination blitzes. So, you know, that putting pressure on the quarterback is an important aspect. That's one of the things that we haven't done as well as we would have liked, but that's not the only thing. I mean, we just haven't played as consistently what we call complementary football, where all three phases work hand in hand. We haven't been doing as good a job of that, and so the pass rush is part of that. But there's plenty of blame to go around when things aren't going the way you want them to.
David said, Hard Knocks took us into the locker room during camp. Can you tell us what it's like in the locker room after a regular season game, both a win and a loss?
A win is a lot more fun. I'll tell you that. A win is a lot more fun. It's a happy place. After a loss, not so much.
Matt from Oldsmar is our next caller. He has a question about sustaining drives. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Coach, first of all, nothing wrong with James Taylor at all. I wanted to say I really feel like, Coach, that a lot of our offensive struggles this year, and we played very well at times, comes down to really just sustaining drives, especially it seems like second down has been a little bit of an issue for us this year. I know the guys are just a lot of the same core group that had a lot of success over periods of time last year, and I believe the guys can do it. But I just wanted to know what you thought about that. It just seems like the deep ball to Deshaun and things like this, if we had more opportunities by sustaining drives, then those more opportunities would come, and I think we'd kind of pull ourselves out. But I wanted to know what you thought about that, Coach. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. And, of course, sustaining drives is part of it. I mean, you know, when you really think about it, I mean, the bottom line is you got to score points. However you score them, whether they're sustained drives, 12 plays, 80-yard drives, or whether, I saw the Chiefs last night had one drive that was 80 yards in three plays, finishing up with a 65-yard touchdown pass. The name of the game is points, and I would just say sustained drives are great. We just haven't scored enough points. I mean, bottom line, we haven't scored enough points. We're a little over 50% in the red zone. Our goal is 60%. I'm not talking so much about last week, but in some of our earlier games, we got down there. It's one thing to not score touchdowns. We also have missed field goals. And that's, again, I'm not pointing the finger at anybody. Point the finger at me. The bottom line is your offense has to score points and your defense has to keep them off the board. So, whether it's sustained drives or quick strikes, either way works.
We're talking to Buccaneers head coach Dirk Koetter. We have our next caller on the line. Greg from Clearwater wants to talk about going for two. Go ahead, Greg.
Hey, Coach. Hey,
Greg.
You know, ever since they moved the point after field goal back, I think the league averages have diminished a little bit in terms of successful point after kicks. And I'm just wondering, let's assume that an NFL team has an average NFL kicker. And moving forward, how do you think going for two, let's say every single time, as opposed to kicking, would in the end size up, you know, from the standpoint of like a metric?
Yeah, as a metric, Greg, I think if you went for two every single time for the whole year, you would come out ahead on the metric side. But the fallacy with that thinking is when you don't take the game into consideration, like say you went for two and, you know, you had one of those days where you were 0-for-5 or, you know, 1 out of 5 and you end up losing by 2 or 3 points, you know, your organization, mainly the head coach, is going to get crushed so bad. that it, you know, it's just not going to make sense. But if you just took, you know, however many touchdowns, let's say you score 50 touchdowns, I don't know what the number is, 100 touchdowns in the season, and you make 43 two-point plays, you know, you're gonna do fine, I think, metric wise. But I just don't think it's practical. The Steelers have been the team since they moved the ball. The Steelers, under Coach Tomlin, have been the team that's been the most aggressive at going for two-point plays. We've studied what the Steelers have done extensively, and you know, we just can't quite buy in to. And they don't go for two every time. I'm not trying to suggest they do, but we just can't quite buy into that. But I imagine there's probably a high school team or a college team someplace that is doing that.
All right, we had a question from Chris, and he said, we've started off a few different games a little bit slow or seeming like we don't have a ton of energy. What are the things that you can do to help to change that and still fit the game plan?
Yeah. You know, in pro football, there's just no excuse for not having energy. There just is no excuse for that. So, you know, that starts with me, and I have to take the hit for that. But, you know, in professional football, you work 270 days a year for 16 opportunities to play. So there's just no excuse for that. And, you know, we can talk about it till we're blue in the face. We as coaches and players just, you know, we just can't let that happen. That just can't be it. I mean, you're going to get outplayed from time to time. You know, it's a very competitive league. Everybody's pretty good. But, you know, to go out and fall behind like we did last week, that's just not acceptable.
And sort of a follow-up to that, Justin wanted to know, as a head coach, what is your role in getting the team ready in terms of a game plan and X's and O's as compared to actually getting them hyped up? Do you view both of those as your job or more just the X's and O's?
Well, ultimately, everything is my responsibility. But as I just said in the previous one, hyped up is overhyped, so to speak. You know, in pro football players are responsibility. It's players' responsibility, you know, to be ready to play, and coaches share in that responsibility. And I do take full responsibility for that. But it's I mean, I was a college coach for 25 years, and you know, when you watch college games and you've got all the red shirts and the freshmen and the walk-ons on the sideline over there jumping around, and the, you know, the assistant strength coach and the volunteer coaches leading them over there in cheers on the sideline. That's you're not going to see that in pro football.
All right, we've got our next caller. Mike from Tampa has a question about DeSean Jackson. Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, Coach. My question was, I know that they double team Mike Evans all the time, and I know they double team DeSean Jackson. Is there any way that you run more crossing routes or for DeSean to get him open, or more crossing routes for Mike Evans to take the double team away? I'm gonna hang up and listen to you.
Yeah, of course. That is a good way. That is a good way. Crossing routes are a good way, you know, to help alleviate that issue. And, you know, that is something that we're working on. That is something, you know, that we try to do. Crossing routes typically are better against man coverage than they are against zone coverage. And when they are successful against zone coverage, there are certain zone coverages they work better than others. But yeah, that's certainly part of it.
All right, we're about at the midway point here of Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Koetter. Still plenty of time to get all of your questions in. Hashtag Bucs Radio on Twitter. Also the Bucs app under the feature section, and you know the phone numbers. Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Koetter, brought to you by Frontier Communications. We'll be right back. This is Buccaneers Radio.
You're listening to Buccaneers Total Access, brought to you by Frontier Communications with head coach Dirk Cutter and Bucs insider Casey Phillips on Tampa Bay Sports Radio, 620 WDAE and 95.3 FM, home of the best Bucs coverage.
Welcome back in on this Friday afternoon. Still plenty of time to get your questions in for head coach Dirk Cutter, hashtag Bucs Radio on Twitter, also the Bucs app under the feature section, or we're also taking callers. All right, our next one is from Fred. He says, first of all, coach, I love the way you take ownership of everything, but you've also had some terrible kicking luck. How are you feeling about Murray, and how has your tough luck changed your play calling on the opponent's side of the 50?
Well, yeah, it hasn't changed the play calling because, these guys are pros, and I've said it all along. Whoever the kicker is, and, if you're an NFL kicker and you're on an NFL team, you're expected to come in and make kicks inside of 50 yards. I mean, that was pretty amazing watching that Titans game the other day, and when I heard the announcer say that Suckup was going for his 48th consecutive make inside of 50 yards. And he made two or three. I think that was the Monday night game. I caught just a little of it. And, so that's the record we're shooting for, 50 kicks in a row inside of 50 yards. And, yeah, granted, it's the record. But, that's obviously what you're shooting for. And, Patrick's earned his shot. He's been patient. He caught a tough break. Coming after the 2014 season when he had the training injury and had to have the knee surgery. So I'm excited for his opportunity on Sunday in Buffalo, and whoever our kicker is, I'll be 100% behind him and won't be changing the play calling.
Braden wanted to know, since we don't play the Bills much, it seems like they're a bit of a mystery team. How does that change or challenge the way you scout them?
Yeah, our scouting is always the same, regardless of who we play. We might not have quite as many notes on a team like Buffalo. In this particular case, though, because they have a new coaching staff led by Sean McDermott, we're very familiar with Coach McDermott because we've been going against him for many years as the defensive coordinator at Carolina. So, he's been right in our division, both here and when myself and Mike Smith were in Atlanta. He's an excellent football coach, and they are running a version of Carolina's defense, and they're playing it very well. On offense, they've got Rick Dennison as their offensive coordinator, and they're running a variation of the things that Rick Dennison did both in Denver and in Houston under Gary Kubiak. So, you have to also take into account that we get all the tapes. We get every game. We've had live scouts at their game who give us an excellent scouting report, keep up with the injuries, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I know we don't get to play these guys very often. They're not in our division, and we only catch them every few years. But as far as as far as what we know on them, it's pretty close to the same.
And speaking of not being able to see the Bills too often, it sounds like there's some Bucs fans up there in New York who don't get to see the Bucs too often who are excited. We actually have a caller, Tommy, from Point Pleasant, New Jersey, who has a question about Bucs fans making the trip over there. So go ahead, Tommy.
Hey, Casey, how you doing? Really good show. How you doing, Coach Tommy?
Yeah, how you doing, Tommy? You gonna be at the game?
Leaving here at 5 in the morning, about a 7-hour trip, but hope it's going to be worth it. I feel confident about this week. And, last week is done with. We just got to move on. So I know you got the boys all prepped up. And I hope they get fired up. We come out early. Let's play football early, not wait till, second quarter. So like I said, it's a good day. It's going to be a great day up there weather-wise. So hopefully I'll be wearing my shorts still. So good luck for Sunday, and hopefully see you down maybe by the field, and let's bring home a win, okay?
Appreciate it, Tommy. It sounds like you've been a coach somewhere in your life because you're giving the same speeches we've been giving all week.
Hey, Coach, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I was going to ask you, on third down, do you like to throw those passes? Do you like those risky passes on third down? Why don't you move it to second down?
Yeah, we study every team by down and distance, and every team has tendencies, whether it be second and long or third and medium, third and long, third and extra long. And, we study every team, try to figure out what our percentages are on what they're going to do, and then, try to put our guys in the best position to beat it.
That was pretty great. Couldn't tell he was from New York at all. Not at all. all right. So for you, Coach, the next one, we have a caller in. Jim from Palm Harbor has a question about winning, toss, and deferring. Go ahead, Jim.
Coach, first I'd like to thank you for the job you're doing. You're making it fun to attend Bucs games again. My question is, the majority of the teams in the league, including the Bucs, defer to the second half for kickoffs. Since we're having problems getting the offense going, have you considered kicking off? Because we have one of the best punters in the league, and if the offense lays an egg, you can always pin it back with your punt, but if they establish a drive and get out ahead, it's nice to be playing with the lead rather than chasing the other team.
Yeah, that's 100% correct. And yes, we have considered that. You got to just weigh that against, it seems like every time you get the ball second, the way it works out, most games you get the ball last in the first half and first in the second half. Of course, when you have a game like you had last week, you're looking at all aspects, and taking the ball right off the bat is definitely one of those.
Our next question is from Ryan, and he says, "How in the world do you try to stop LeSean McCoy?"
Yeah, well, that's a question that a lot of people have been awake a lot of nights across this league, because LeSean McCoy is a terrific football player. He gets that ball in his hands, and, he's a threat to take it to the house every time, whether they hand it to him or whether they throw it to him. They haven't really been able to get him on track quite as much this year in the running game, but they've been doing a really good job throwing it to him in screen games. So, we know that he's a guy that we gotta have all hands on deck to try to keep him sewn up.
We're talking to head coach Dirk Cutter here. We have our next caller, Steve from Tampa, has a question about looking at improvements during the regular season. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, Coach, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, real quick question. Just to make it real simple, with all the hype, all the talent that this team has, at this point of the season, do you think you're a better football team now than week one? And if so, why or why not?
No, I don't think we're a better football team right now. And the reason is simple. We're not playing like we can play. And obviously that's my issue. That's my issue. That starts with me. I'm the one in charge of figuring that out. So, I said earlier on this show, I don't think we're playing complementary football where offense, defense, special teams play off each other. When you don't feel like you're playing as good as you are, everybody's going to look at the coach, and rightfully so. So, we got to figure it out, because we do have a talented team. I believe in these guys. I know when we do play our best, we're going to be hard to beat, but we didn't do that last week, and the good news is we got a chance to get back on it Sunday in Buffalo.
Aaron wants to know, how different is it preparing for Tyrod Taylor as compared to someone like a Palmer last week in terms of mobility?
Yep, well, it is definitely different, because the last two quarterbacks we played, Tom Brady and Carson Palmer, are guys that are staying in the pocket. They want to step up into the pocket. They're not going to move laterally. Tyrod Taylor, he is a very mobile quarterback, and he's also not the tallest quarterback. So he wants to escape to the outside. He wants to get space. He wants to get outside and create things on the perimeter where if you come up, he's going to throw it over your head. And he's such a dangerous passer in that he can just flick his wrist and get the ball 50 to 60 yards downfield. So, where we were trying to push the pocket from the inside against Brady and Palmer, against a guy like Tyrod Taylor, you want to make sure you try to box him in and keep him in the pocket. Again, like all this kind of stuff, easy to talk about it, harder to do it.
Eric wants to know, which is the most important part of your week for game prep purposes, or in other words, the thing you would least want to give up, whether it's a certain meeting or practice or time with your coaching staff, what would you say it is?
Yeah, sure. It's Mondays and Tuesdays, and usually about a 8-hour block on Mondays, maybe 4 hours separated by a couple meetings and another 4 hours where I'm studying film by myself and coming up with my thoughts on the game plan. And the other coaches are doing the same thing. And then we come together as a staff and we come together offensively and defensively and formulate the game plan. But it all starts with film study. I mean, it all starts with film study. I really enjoy that part of it. But in my opinion, that's the most important part, is you need that time to study the tape.
All right, we still have one more segment coming up here. You can keep sending in those questions for Coach. Hashtag Bucks Radio on Twitter, also the Bucks app under the feature section, or call in. This is Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Cutter, brought to you by Frontier Communications. Don't go anywhere. This is Buccaneers Radio.
Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Cutter now continues. Brought to you by Frontier Communications on 620 WDAE and 95.3 FM, home of the best Bucks coverage.
Welcome back in. This is our final segment here with head coach Dirk Cutter. He's still got a couple minutes here to get those questions in. Hashtag Bucks Radio on Twitter, Bucks app under the feature section, or call in. All right, we have a caller right now. Jay from Tampa has a question about Jameis and secondary reads. Go ahead, Jay.
Hi, Coach. This is Jay. I just have a couple of concerns. One, I've been concerned the last few games. It seems like Jameis, in critical moments, is locking in on one receiver instead of seeing the second and third guy. And it seems to be players that are in multiple coverage over the middle. And I think it's because he's very accurate with players that are running across the field. And he's kind of relying on that. But he seems to have a little bit of an issue with players that are receivers that are running away from him down the field as far as his accuracy. What have you guys discussed with him to try to calm him down and get him to try to see those second and third reads?
Well, Jameis has a first, a second, and a third progression on every play. So, you know, I don't necessarily agree with all of your analysis there. Obviously, you're entitled to your opinion, but you know, every quarterback in the league has his reads and has his progressions, and I think in general, Jameis does a good job with that. As I said many times, he'll be better when he's got 100 starts under his belt as compared to 37, and I think he's progressing across the board. So, you know, what you do is you work on it every day. That's what you're doing about it. I mean, when you put your game plan in every week and then you go out to practice, sometimes you're practicing against the scout team, sometimes you're practicing against your own defense, sometimes you're working on your reads on a written test, sometimes you're going through a video test, you're watching tape with quarterback coach Mike Bajakian, so he's working on it all the time.
All right, Edmund wants to know, without giving too much away, what are your in-game adjustments like, and how hard is it to see snapshots of gameplay in real time and convert that into points?
You have to give me that again. I didn't quite catch that second part, Casey.
So I think he was basically asking how hard is it to basically see this, like the snapshots, like what guys would see in film or maybe what you used to see in the booth in real time to be able to know exactly what you need to do to convert that into points.
Well, if you knew how to convert everything into points, you wouldn't be a coach. You'd be living in Vegas. But real-time adjustments are 1,000 times more difficult than doing it when you're studying tape, because it happens fast. You got the crowd involved, you've got the human element involved, and you know, standing on the field is not the best place to watch a game. I mean, you know, I can see the game a lot better when I was up at the press box as a coordinator, and you know, I think there's fans out there that see the game really well from their vantage point. So yeah, in-game adjustments are difficult, and you have to rely on your coaches in the press box. You have to rely on the still pictures we get on the Surface tablets. You also have to rely on the information and the feedback you're getting from the players on the field. It's a combination of all that stuff.
Our next caller is Mike from Tampa, and he has a question about your interests outside of football. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, Coach. I'm not one of those guys that's hitting the panic button right now. I just wanted to know kind of what you like to do outside of football when you're not, you know, I know during the season your head's probably always in the game, but outside of that, what do you like to do?
Well, since I moved to Tampa, Mike, we actually moved to a house on the water, and I've been trying to learn how to master this fishing around here off my dock. And a couple weeks ago, I'm proud to say that I went out there in a high tide and right about sunset and caught myself about my second or third snook that I've caught, and I also snuck over on my neighbor's dock, so don't tell them, and caught a nice jack off my neighbor's dock.
All right, our next question is from Doug, and he says, what happens when the offensive coaches come together and have very different ideas on how to attack the defense?
You cut out on me there, Casey.
Oh, okay. So he was saying, what happens when the offensive coaches come together and have very opposing ideas of how to attack the defense?
Well, we talk them out. You know, it depends on how much time you have. If you're talking about in between series or at halftime, you don't have a whole lot of time. And but during the week, that's why you have coaches meetings. Guys come in with their ideas. We talk them out. They say why they formulated their reasoning behind what they're thinking. And, you know, there's some very illuminating thoughts that you're going, yeah, I didn't look at it that way. That's a great idea. You know, we have a system that we believe in that has flexibility, gives us the ability to move our guys around, you know, move our receivers, move our backs, move our tight ends into different positions. We have some really creative coaches, and it's a process. That's what we do pretty much all day and most of the night on Monday and Tuesday.
Our next Twitter question says, do you worry that the pass or run is getting tipped off by the offensive line, specifically with tackle alignment?
Yeah, there's something to that. You know, there's something to that. And, you know, we try to do some things to break our tendencies. But, you know, that's one thing in this league, especially players studying other players. You know, all of our offensive linemen write reports every week on the guys they're going to go against to try to use it as a tip sheet, and vice versa. That happens at every position. The coaches do it. So, you know, by down and distance, a lot of times, you know, your opponent knows what your run pass percentage is. I mean, you know, in the NFL, most teams, if you get past third and two, they, you know, it's a pass. So, but there definitely is some of that, some things where, certain guys' stances, you know, give tips off, and, you know, we're trying to break those tendencies whenever we can.
Paul from Palm Harbor says, I haven't seen the linebackers utilized in blitzes as much, it seems. So any chance we see more 3-4 or linebacker blitzes without being able to generate as much pressure from our front four recently?
That's a possibility. Yeah, that's a possibility for sure. You know, people tend to think that just because you change the formation of your defense from a 4-3 to a 3-4 that automatically equates to more pressure, which it does not. But blitzing more linebackers, that definitely could equate to more pressure. And, you know, a 3-4 alignment is something that we're, you know, when we can get everybody healthy, it is something that we're considering, yeah.
And finally, Josh wants to know if you're going to get a chance to eat any of those buffalo wings when you're up there this weekend.
Yeah, a lot of times night snack the night before the game, a lot of times you know, we have a pretty standard fare, but many times they'll feature something that's local. And yeah, I'm not sure if we're gonna get any true blue buffalo wings this week, but that would be nice. Sounds pretty good.
I agree with that. It might be the hotel's impersonation of it, but that might be close enough for you.
Yep.
All right. Well, Coach, thank you so much for your time with us tonight. We really appreciate it. And thanks to all of you for joining us here on Buccaneers Total Access with Head Coach Dirk Cutter. We do it every Friday at 5. Love hearing your questions. You can always send those to us. Enjoy the game this weekend. Have a fun and safe weekend. And we'll see you next time. Buccaneers Total Access with Head Coach Dirk Cutter, brought to you by Frontier Communications. This is Buccaneers Radio.